reminds me of my childhood when the BBC had this program every day for children that always started with exactly the same words, which was, "Are you sitting comfortably? Now we'll begin." So the title of the talk today is Letting Love Out and Letting Love In. And we have a description in our mind of what is Buddhist practice that is often a little bit missing the love dimension. And there is a famous poem from Zen that says, the Dharma is not to be found in the books and in the teachings of the masters and in all the texts and in being a good practitioner. The Dharma is to be found in the love letters that you're receiving from the wind and the sun and the moon and the snow. The love letters. Mikhtavei Ahava. Love is essential part of all authentic spiritual practice. It doesn't matter whether it's Buddhist or some other spiritual journey. Love is going to be central and extremely important. And it's already here in the practice that we've been doing up to now and in all the practice in a way that you've been doing up to now. Only it's not given a very clear description. So the words that are, in a sense, words of love that don't use that big word, love. It's a big word. But the words that you already have used and you were already practicing, such as kind attention, kindness, a sense that the practice is not about struggle and fighting. It's not about attacking what's difficult in us, but about listening and going out to the painful places in us, to be ready to receive our experience, to be soft, to allow things to be what they are, is already love. And that's written into the Vipassana practice, especially in the direction inside insight meditation. And it's true that there are parts of the Buddhist path, including Zen, and I think this is why this poem was written, you will find, and you can find, quite technical, pressured, hard, and rather male practice. And you can find it whether it in also in the Buddhist world or the Christian world or other practices that are very, very hard or mind or achievement oriented, you'll find it that exists. But up to now, especially in the way that we practice, which I think goes back to the original realization that led to the Buddha's awakening when he said, I have to be soft in order to awaken. And he received milk from a woman, kheer, it's sweet yogurt, after some very strong male pressured practice, he realized this wasn't going to get him there. And he had to relax and be soft and receive the feminine. And that led to his awakening. And we're in a sense following that line. So you already have, in anyone that's been sitting on our retreats, you already will have had the life, but written as these kind of words or this kind of approach, without calling it love. And as we continue to practice, the heart is by itself develops its power. It happens by itself. It's impossible not to. If we open our inner eyes, the power of insight, and we see, this seeing is already creating closeness, intimacy, and interest in life, and that's love. If we, on a retreat, you know, more than once, I'm sure we've all seen somebody just stand there and watch a line of ants, because they're nimalim uvrim et hashvil. And say, wow, look at these beings walking with me. That's a moment of love. It's not just a technical moment of like being a scientist. This is a moment of love. And as we develop a bigger mind, power, consciousness, love comes with it by itself. I remember a small example, Jack Kornfield's book. Both books, actually, that he's written, which became sort of iconic books in the development of Dharma in the Western world. They're both about the heart. The Path with the Heart is his first book. And I've spent time with him. And I remember one time we spent a year preparing a peace walk in New York. And so we were in New York for this peace walk, and it was really a heartful event. And we were walking slowly. There was like 500-600 people, slowly around Central Park, with myself and a Sufi sheikh and a priest were leading. It was a peace walk, and Jack was so moved, and we were all so moved, and the heart was so touched by something which is basic Dharma called peace work or being with. And then the next day, Jack and I went to see the Metropolitan Museum in New York, and he was like a child rushing to see what the Indus Valley civilization and the early India and the Harappa civilization and so on. And he was nearly crying through, wow. And when I talked to him, we were almost like two children crying together, so touched by the bigness of life. And it brings tears to the eyes just in a natural way. The heart, when faced with the mystery and the openness and the bigness of life, the heart will be touched. So it's inherent. It's part of the practice. It will happen by itself. There's nobody I can think of that is awakening or is awakened or in the, shall we say, developed a soul who doesn't have that heart full of heart and full of kindness. It's just by itself. The heart is a huge power, and one of the powers of the heart is that it doesn't know boundary. The mind knows boundaries, gvulot, and basically the mind is used to saying this and that. This is me, that is the world. This is me, there is the other, ha'acher. not me. This is good for me. This is not good for me. The mind is all the time busy with havchanot, hagdarot, separations. The heart doesn't really know boundaries. The heart, in a way, is the developed heart is the sign is immeasurable. It cannot be measured. In the Jewish tradition, the word chesed is the word that we're talking about here. And in the traditional, especially, I would say, authentic Jewish practice, chesed is one of its characters, is it has no measure. And there's, for example, the mythology says that God tried to make the world based on din. In the Kabbalah, the din and chesed are opposite. The God tried to make the world on the basis of din. And the din is the divisions, the havchanot, this and that, and this and that. And total disaster. Didn't work. The world couldn't exist for 2 minutes. So he needed chesed. And when there was chesed, which cannot be measured, and has its character, is non-measurable, then the world could exist. And you can think of it in many ways, left brain, right brain, all kinds of ways of looking at this. But quality of love that is helping us in our spiritual development is it's no, doesn't know boundary and division. It doesn't cut the world into pieces. It joins the world. It joins us to the world. So we need to to collect the power of the heart into our practice, because it's a power, it's an engine that drives our practice. And our practice is moving out from a small mind into a big mind heart. The trouble is, the heart is very wild. We can't really control it. We can't put it in a box. It's rather scary. In 1 minute, the heart, all these nice things I'm saying, but I'm sure more than one of you are thinking, yeah, wait a minute, but my heart just says, I'm angry, I'm fed up, I don't like this, it's hot. That's my heart talking. What's all this talk about expanded heart power? My heart right now says, I'm fed up. So the heart is uncontrollable. And we can find it scary and unpredictable. We don't know what the heart's going to do next. So how can the heart be a power? How can we rely on the heart as a power of liberation when it's so crazy and uncontrollable? So because of this, there is quite a lot of wisdom in the Dharma about ways of developing the power of the heart, which are wise and helpful. And it's quite rich in the Dharma. It's rich. There's a lot of guidance and encouragement. So I want to introduce now a little bit of the teaching, the basic concepts of the heart power in the Dharma. So the power of the heart for liberation is called metta. And metta means loving kindness in English. In Hebrew, tuv lev ohev, or rochav lev, it is really love and kindness. That's why it's called loving kindness. It's not just a pure love, it's love connecting us to the world and being kind to the world. So there's a kindness in it, and then there is what we call love in it. And chesed is a good word in the Kabbalistic sense, in the early language, the Kabbalah language.
Even biblical
language. And it's a very basic power. Its quality is, we cannot measure it. It doesn't know boundaries and limits. The Tibetan world uses the word compassion in the same way. This can be a little confusing, but generally when the Tibetans use the word compassion, they mean in the Theravada tradition, in this tradition, metta, or love. Both of them are really the same. And there are four qualities or powers of the heart in the tradition, and these are called the Brahma Viharas. Brahma is heaven, or Shmini, above, the God world, the divine, the divine Elohut. And Vihara is a palace or a place. So it's the place in heaven, or the heavenly place, or the heavenly palace. And in the Christian world, the word kingdom of heaven is used quite a lot in Christianity. And it's a bit like that. It's the heavenly, and it, because it's got this quality of divine, of no boundary, that the love is called the Brahma Viharas. And there are four Brahma Viharas. There is metta, loving kindness. And then there is karuna, which is compassion. And then there is mudita, which is joy. And then there is upekkha, which is equanimity. I just want to explain them a little bit. Metta is the foundation. Metta is the basis of all of them. Love, enduring, endless, boundless, breaking boundaries, joining us to the world, inspiring us, filling our heart and liberating our heart. Compassion is this love when it meets pain. And when it meets pain, there is something that little bit changes the color of that love. And we might feel, oh, I feel the pain of myself or others. Oh, I understand that pain, I hear that pain. I'm with that pain, and it's a little different. My heart is vibrating with the pain of other beings, or of myself, or of just the world. And it might have a colour of sadness, or it might have a colour of sympathy, or it might have a colour of our pain. We may take on pain from others, and we feel it inside. Our heart becomes pain, has pain, because of the pain of others. So compassion, chemla, real chemla, which I think the early word again in Hebrew, rachamim, in the Bible is right, because also God is called rachamim, and rachamim comes from rechem, the womb. But I think it's the right word in the early use of the word rachamim, not in modern Hebrew. So chemla, compassion, is the second. Karuna. Mudita is the opposite. It's the same metta, the same love. When we see someone happy, it just happens, it lifts us up. When we see joy, we are joyful. A child is laughing, and we want to laugh as well. It's the spontaneous joy with the joy of life. We want to dance with the dance of life. And that's mudita. So it also is a colour of love, sort of love coloured by joy. And the fourth, upekkha, is love in the deepest sense of being totally connected to the universe, being part part of the world, being, joining the world, but it has the quality of balance. The color of upekkha is being able to hold contradictions up and down, good and painful, being able to be big enough and wide enough to balance, to be steady in the middle of the craziness of a tsunami, of life's events, and also of the other, of the heart. So upekkha balances the other qualities of the heart. It gives, it's like a ship which has weight at the bottom, so the ship isn't all the time knocked over. It's more steady. So these qualities of the heart, metta, and the quality of metta, of loving kindness, compassion, in the tradition, are, we can cultivate them, we can develop them. And that's why the word bhavana is used in relation to metta, metta bhavana. Bhavana is cultivation, to develop, to pour. And so, Simi already used the word in the instructions this morning, tipur, develop. And it's an interesting one, because many of us might come to the Buddhist practice with the sense that all I need to do is be with what is. So how is it that now we're talking about developing, which basically means developing what is not? And how do I fit these two together? Being, I'm assuming, I thought, vipassana is being with what is, just allowing everything that arises in the field of consciousness to come and go. And that's what I need to do here. That's what a retreat is about. And now from the Bhamma, from Simi and myself, you're hearing a slightly different language, the language of development. And the truth is that both languages are really, really important in the Dharma world. Because in a way, what brings us to awakening is not experience, is not a meditation experience, a kind of explosion of the mind that brings an ecstatic release. It may happen, but then you still got to go to the office the next day, arrive in the high-tech company. It's not experience that brings us to awakening. It's qualities of our being. It's qualities of our being. They are the engines that drive awakening. And so, looking at the mabada of a walking meditation or a sitting meditation, actually what's really working for us is what comes when we get up from the cushion, what's left, what we take with us when we get up from the cushion, what we take with us when we go into the dining hall, what we take with us when we go out into the street. Because the whole path is about qualities of being. And qualities of being can be developed. They're developed by sitting and being with what is, but they're also developed by being aware of the kind of qualities that we need. So it's built into the system, but it's good to know what are the qualities we're talking about. For example, love. For example, calmness, quiet. For example, balance, equanimity, steadiness. For example, patience, tolerance. For example, truth, honesty, authenticity. For example, generosity, dana, giving and receiving. These are qualities that the practice develops in us, but we can also develop them directly. And there's a whole big teaching, which I don't have time to go into, about the wholesome or beneficial or helpful qualities which we need for awakening. There's a huge, huge teaching. It's vast teaching. The paramis, the factors of awakening, kusala, etc., etc. It's huge. So we can, with that understanding, I think it helps us to see that we can develop qualities and that they are developed by themselves by just sitting quietly watching the breath. Both of them are developing something in us as well as freeing us. And they go together. So when we talk about developing the power of the heart, developing metta, the first thing we should understand is that this development is actually refining the power of the heart. Refining zakek, zikuk, we clean it. The heart is working all the time. It's always telling us things. And half the time it's telling us really difficult things like, oh, I'm fed up, oh, this is terrible, oh, why is my neighbor doing this, oh, I hate my mother, oh, the heart is busy with a lot of negative messages, angers, fears, irritations. So part of what we're doing is replacing negative heart messages with positive ones. That's already development, bhavana. It's already intentional. It needs an intention to purify the heart, to replace our anger and our fear with kindness. And it's really helpful if we do that consciously, clearly, and called development. It is called bhavana, cultivation. And the second aspect, or another aspect, of this development is to expand the boundary of the heart. The heart is usually a slave of our interests. So we can, for example, love in relationships, romantic love, for example. We can keep this love going until our partner begins to shout at us, get angry with us, until we have fights, we change, we have differences of opinions, they want to go one direction, we want to go another, and all of a sudden the love dries up. That means the love is limited by experiences of a struggle. We see someone crossing the road, compassion, who is blind. Everybody would help that person cross the road because we all have compassion in our heart. But imagine there's a few more people standing around who are not helping that person cross the road. Our reaction was, why don't they do something? Anger. No, compassion would include the people that don't help. Can we extend our compassion to include those? Our family relationships, so much love is there, and then we find it bounded, controlled. I love my kids as long as they do what I say. Or I love my partner as long as they do what I say. Love is mixed with control. Warmth, heartfulness is often limited by measuring. I'll only love if I get back what I expect to get back, for example. Friendliness, love of just people. How many of us would say, yeah, I love my own kids and my family's kids and my grandchildren, but the neighbor's kids? They're so noisy and unpleasant, and I don't want to. They're just disturbing my rest, and they're disturbing me all the time. So the love is stopping at the fence of our house. And the neighbors, you can't go, our love doesn't go to their kids. Or, I love my group. I can't love Palestinian kids because they're there. They're a problem for me. I can't love that group or the other group. Or love bounded, controlled, limited. So part of our practice is to expand the boundary of love. And there we need to meet the limit of our love, and at that point, push that limit. And it's something very inspiring, that love is expanded through meeting resistance. Just like when we walk, the only way we can move is because there's resistance. We touch the ground and there's friction, chikuch. So that's make us move. If the ground was made, if it was ice and we were slipping, we couldn't walk. So we walk because of resistance. We move love when we meet resistance. That we know the boundary, and that's where we can move. That's where we can push. And in a very simple way, we all do that. Sometimes when we, for example, have an argument with a friend or a partner or whatever, and something in us does want to hold that love and increase that love. So the other person who's angry, we might look in their eyes and say, you know, I love you. I know you've had a bad day. It's okay. And that way we increase the love instead of saying, oh, you're angry with me? Go to hell. You see the difference. We meet the limit of love and extend it to places where we wouldn't otherwise allow it. We would be afraid, or we would be inhabit, or we would be confused, or we would be in ourself. So that's the other part of the practice. And in the how is it done, and how are we going to practice here in this retreat in the next few days? The very earliest teaching at the time of the Buddha treated love, the development of love, as a vibration, as tether, tetherim shalahava. And I want to quote this kind of teaching, which is all through the texts, all through the texts. This is the kind of teaching that he told his monks. Again, a bhikkhu, a monk, stays spreading one quarter of the circle, means like from there to there, say, one quarter with a mind filled with loving kindness, and then the second quarter, and then the third quarter, and then the fourth quarter, and then above, and then below, and then around, and everywhere, and to all beings, and to himself, he stays, spreading the whole world totality everywhere, with a mind filled with loving kindness, with abundant, endless, gavoa, exalted, immeasurable, without any hostility and without any ill will. Ill will is anger or negativity. That's how he described the practice. And that is something that we can experience ourselves at the level of this spreading kindness or spreading love. And it happens in a very simple way when we feel belonging. We walk outside and we feel love. We feel we belong to the world around us, the trees in front and the sky above, and we feel that just sense of belonging and sense of goodness. But it's also very subtle. And for many of us, it's too subtle and too abstract. And the Buddha, don't forget, was talking to bhikkhus. And bhikkhus are part of his sangha that they're not just on retreat. They've given up their house, their world, their car, their money, their families, and they are in total 24-hour monastic practice. So, in a way, they're really, really advanced practitioners as bhikkhus. They're totally do nothing else in their life, and so they can perhaps handle some practice or development which is more subtle or more abstract. But we might find such practice too abstract. How do we spread love? To who? What do I do? So we can indeed find it abstract. So, especially in this retreat, we can use wise ways and methods of development of the heart. One of them, which we in a way already began with, is starting with places that are easier to feel. For example, appreciation, arakha. And it's easier, much easier. It's not abstract. We appreciate the care of the people in the kitchen that cook for us our food. And they're on retreat. No one's paying them. They're giving us from their heart. And we can say, well, I really appreciate what you're doing. We appreciate the retreat. We appreciate each other. We can appreciate a good sitting in the morning. It was quiet. We can appreciate the teachers. We can appreciate ourselves. Wow, my life is precious. I can give myself appreciation. So here, appreciation or akarat todah, gratitude, would be entrances, gates into metta, which is something easier for us. And so this is one way that we'll be developing bhavana, cultivating love through entrance gates that are a bit easier for us. And we can see those doorways more easily. Another place that we can practice metta is bemet, seeing the blocks and the limits that are closing our love, that are limiting our love. And we might experiencing that, we might experience these kind of blocks. And I'll give you this very, very, very simple example. We might be sitting here with pain in the back pain, shoulder pain, and thinking, I can't practice love. My back's hurting. Stop all this talk about love. I can't, when I'm suffering like this, forget it. It's not relevant, all that talk. Leave that to the angels. I'm a human being sitting, struggling, suffering, my back's hurting and it's hot. And shut up. Actually, that's exactly the place to practice love. Because what do we do with the back pain that expands and cultivates love? We love it. We love our back pain. We send it love. We send it healing. We say to our back pain, or it's too hot, or I'm uncomfortable. We send to that place the message, I hear you. I'm listening. I'm with you. You're my crying child. I'm not going to kick you out. I'm not going to throw you out. I'm going to hug you. I'm going to embrace you. Huge difference. And that way, we expanded the boundary of love. And a third wise way that we're going to practice here in the retreat of waking up the love is to use phrases, mishpatim. And the reason we do that is partly we have many, many phrases in the mind anyway. We have a lot of junk in the mind. We have cacophonia in the mind. So let's change that language a bit with something that brings love. So we're going to use mishpatim. The advantage of words in the mind is that they're quite a strong and clear tool. Kli ma'od ma'od barur, very clear. And they do make a change. And if we work with the phrases, we will be working with the phrases, with phrases that trigger love, remind us of love, remind the mind and the heart of what it's like to love. And these phrases, we'll be using them. And so that's another entrance gate into love. And you'll be getting teachings. We'll be both, all of us, Simeon, Val and myself, will be giving teachings on how to work with the phrases and all the other wise ways in which we can develop bhavana, we can develop love. It's worth the final word. It's worth remembering that we're not trying to invent love. We're not trying to collect love from a place that doesn't exist. We are all full of love. We received it with the milk of our mother. Our heart is talking all the time, but it's covered over by wounds, by experiences, by conditioning, by fears, by habits, by confusions, by negative emotions, by angers and pains. So something in all this practice is actually about uncovering the heart. Bhavana, we can see, is uncovering, not just trying to develop something that doesn't exist. It is in us already. And we just need to give it space, give it freedom, trust it, and learn how we can expand it, the power that's already inside us. Thank you.